Move over, Hunger Games. There are some new teen warriors in town, or at least between the covers of a book. This week we're thinking about the much-anticipated debut YA novel by Saba Tahir. It's called An Ember in the Ashes, an epic fantasy set in a world reminiscent of ancient Rome. The book's just been released, but movie rights have already been snatched up, and there's talk about a sequel. So Charles Monroe Kane caught up with Saba Tahir to discover what all this buzz is about.
Could you, for our grown-up listeners out there in public radio land, can you describe this book for us?
Sure thing. An Ember in the Ashes is a young adult fantasy. It is about two people, a girl named Laya who is fighting for her family, and a soldier named Elias who is fighting for his freedom. Laya and Elias live under a really brutal military empire, and when Laya's brother is taken by Empire soldiers and tossed into prison, she knows she has to get him back. He's been accused of treason, and that's basically a death sentence. The problem is Laya's not very brave, so she's not sure how to get him back. And her part of the book is really about her journey to finding the courage to save her brother. Elias is a soldier of the Empire, and he doesn't want to be a soldier anymore. He attends a military academy called Blackcliff, where he's been training for 14 years, and all he really wants to do is escape this place and find his freedom. But before he can do that, he's ordered to participate in a series of tests that will decide the next martial emperor. So when Laya and Elias's paths cross, they realize that their fates are intertwined and that their decisions are going to change the future of the very empire in which they live.
Oh, that sounds great. Sounds like fun to write.
Thank you.
You know, I did something different. I got your book, the galley copy, a couple months ago, and I said to myself, wait a minute. I have a 10-year-old son, and this is the kind of books he reads. So I thought I'd take it home to him and see if it's any good, and then I'd interview you. But he really liked it. So then he started talking to his friends about it, and he got two neighbor girls, a girl named Sophia and Lydia. They're 9 and 10, and he's 10. And I had them all read it, and I had them write all the questions that I'm going to ask you today. But first, I want you to hear their little discussion of last night where I got together with them and said, hey, you guys, what did you think about the book? And here's what they had to say.
So I like the way she described all the characters and the personalities and all the sequences that happen. It's really cool. She's a really good author.
I like how she explained every little detail.
An Ember in the Ashes was really good because she really described everything, so you could really get the good picture in your mind of what the characters were doing at the time.
I've never read a book like this because it's different. So it's different to me. That's another reason I really liked it a lot, because I got a chance to explore new, different kinds of books.
What about the violence?
It was awesome!
It was deranged. I've never read anything like with violence.
What do you think of the love part of the book?
I think it's unnecessary.
I think it basically showed that love can be dangerous.
Yep.
It can make people unhappy. And for what happened.
And angry, too.
Yeah.
That was the best thing I've ever heard. I'm, like, struggling not to tear up right now. That was so great to listen to.
Basically, what I did with the kids last night is I made them assignment was that by the yesterday, they had to have write 10 questions each. They had to write it out. And last night, we discussed the questions. So here's some questions. I want to start with Lydia. I think she asked, I think, a pretty basic question, but an important one. She said, where did the idea for this book come from?
Ember was inspired by two things. The first was that, you know, I grew up in this isolated town in the Mojave Desert where I really didn't feel like I fit in. I was picked on. I watched my parents and my family deal with a lot of racism. So I felt very voiceless and, you know, isolated as a kid. And I turned to books to deal with that feeling. So, you know, as I grew, I sort of realized that I could find a voice and I could find my own power through writing. And in 2007, I decided, you know, I want to write a book. And I didn't know what it was going to be about. I just knew that it would be about people who like me as a kid, you know, felt like outcasts and who feel powerless. You know, people who just feel like they have, you know, no voice and that they're very stifled. At the same time, I was working at the Washington Post as a copy editor, and I was reading about some truly voiceless and powerless people: the Sudanese genocide, extrajudicial jailings in Kashmir, child soldiers in Colombia and the DRC, and, you know, all of that sort of combined to plant the seed for Ember.
And so are you in the book? I mean, are you permeated throughout it? You're the young you?
Yeah, Laya is very similar to the teenage me. I was not very brave. I was not somebody who was willing to stick up for myself or to stick up for anyone. You know, I was just too sort of timid and afraid. Elias, the other character, is somebody who has a lot of empathy. And I think because of my youth and sort of being picked on, I've always had that. And it grew when I became a teenager because, you know, I think I was sort of more emotionally capable of understanding what other people might be going through. So Elias's empathy, I think, also comes from me.
Now, I have a question from Sophia. This one's an interesting one for you. She says, and I'm going to quote it here. She says, as the author, who did you want to love each other more? And is that what ended up in the book?
This is where I can sort of talk a little bit about how much these characters, how real they are to me.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like they act on their own volition and I just sort of record it. They're like family members to me. I've had them in my head for years now. So I wasn't like, oh, I really, really hope that, you know, Laya ends up with Elias or Laya ends up with Kenan or, you know, mm-hmm. Helene ends up with Elias. I was sort of thinking more like, I hope that they achieve their goals and I hope that they find happiness.
So if someone breaks their heart or is killed, do you feel it? I mean, is this something?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Yes. There's a scene in the book where one of the more villainous characters has lost someone really important to him. And I actually was really sad when I wrote that scene because even though this character is not very nice, I know that he had a very deep love for the person that he lost. And, you know, it hurts to do that to a character, to take, you know, to take something from them. There are other characters in the book who die, and that hurt not just because of, you know, because I like them as characters, but because of the manner in which they die, which is hard, you know?
Yeah.
So it definitely takes a toll. Like, I wrote the first scene I was talking about, and I was, like, moping around the house, and, you know, my husband was like, what's wrong? And I was like, I had to kill a character. And, you know, luckily he gets it. He's sort of, you know, been living with me for a while, so he knows. But, you know, it's very real. It's a very real feeling.
You said earlier that you, as a youth, you know, because of race and other issues, you were picked on and you felt powerless, and these characters became, you know, examples of parts of your past. When one of them is empowered or one of them dies off, does that happen to you as well?
I think that it does to a degree. When Laya, for example, was showing her cowardice, it like really bothered me, you know? And that was where I sort of had to learn not to pull my punches and not to just turn her into what I want her to be or what I would have wanted myself to be at that age. I had to let her develop on her own.
Mm. That's interesting. You know, Lydia wanted to know, and again, this is a quote, she said, with so much violence and war and stuff, why do you have your characters love each other at all?
Because I think that that's an accurate representation of our world. And that's what's wonderful about our world, and that's what should give us hope, is that even in, you know, the darkest times and the darkest situations, we can still have the capacity to both love and hope. And that's a really wonderful thing that I think we should celebrate.
Now, of course, love is not the only theme in your book. There's also a lot of violence and war that plays a heavy role. My son, Odin, he wanted to know, and I'll quote him here, he said, how in the world did you come up with the mask design? And what does it mean that it's permanent? And I guess you should explain the mask to listeners first.
Sure. So students at Blackcliff Academy, which is the scary, scary academy, where Elias is training, are given a mask at the age of 14. And they put that mask on, and it is made of living metal. So it ends up merging with their face over time so that their skin is silver, and it's like a part of them. You can see their features underneath it. I decided to write about the mask because I saw something on television. I think it was a report about like rioters in Eastern Europe somewhere. And there was a line of rioters and a line of police, and the police had shields and masks over their face. And the expressions on the faces of the rioters were so open and angry, sometimes scared. And the riot police were sort of this wall, you know, with no feeling. There was no emotion there. And that image really stuck with me. That is also a part of our world and something that I thought was worth exploring.
Why permanent? Why are the masks don't come off?
They don't come off because I think that with every action that these young soldiers take that is really violent or oppressive, it becomes more a part of them. As their training continues and they become more committed to the empire, their chances of sort of ever turning back are diminished. And so, you know, the mask sinks in with them and it becomes a part of them because in the same way that your actions and your history become a part of you.
Well, but the kids really wanted to know something last night. And they wanted to know, once the mask is permanently a part of your face, does that mean you're a human being beyond hope?
No, it does not.
My son and his friends, they're 10 and 9, but they're reading the teenage stuff. Hunger Games, Divergent, The Maze, you know, on and on and on and on. These are all dystopias. They're bleak, they're dark, and they have a terrible view of humanity. And I worry sometimes, I'm like, are we teaching them that humanity's bad? And I'm wondering if you, as a young adult writer, do you feel like you have some responsibility with the idea of hope for these young readers?
I personally feel like I have that responsibility because hope has played such a big role in my life. And it is something that I think is so important for young readers, all readers, but young readers in particular, to really to take with them into adulthood, which is, you know, not to become embittered and not to lose hope, even in really bad situations. So a lot of the darkness in Ember is, you know, it is reflective of the darkness in our world. And I think that it's important for young people to know that that exists, because at some point we will all come up against it.
Right.
And in that way, they might be a little bit more prepared. But at the same time, I think it's important for readers to know that hope is just as powerful. It's not nothing in the face of darkness. It's a very powerful force.
Well, thank you very, very much. It was a great book. The kids in the neighborhood loved it.
I think that is so wonderful. Please, please tell them I say thank you for all their thoughtful questions. That's awesome.
Saba Tahir is the author of the new YA novel, An Ember in the Ashes. She talked with Charles Monroe Kane. And thanks to our young readers, Odin, Sophia, and Lydia.